You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Episode 211 today. Yesterday was 210, obviously, but I completely forgot to mention 210 because we, you know, every time JR is on, he comes on to a recording. We don't like start the show when he's on. We just bring him on right away because it's all raw. So I completely forgot to mention episode 210. So, you know, it's like you have one job, right? You have one job, get it right, and you can't get it right.
What's going on?
We're both in awe of you. I've never seen cheekbones. I've never seen cheekbones like yours. I've never seen a guy that literally looks like you. It looks like you like take your beard and just stick it on your face instead of growing it. You know, like it's ridiculous. How much manicuring do you need?
Not much, man. You get like, it's not that bad. Like, I don't know. I do it every few days. I'll let it grow for like, I don't know. I'll shave like in the line every 3 days or whatever, 4 days, but I'll take it down with the Manscaped. I don't know. Once a week.
Have you ever had a, like the, like in the movies where they take the straight blade and do your beard and shave it? Have you ever had that before?
I haven't had it on my beard. I've had it on like the back, you know, like at a barber shop, like the back of your neck or whatever.
Yeah, I've had it
down the side.
It's awful.
I don't mind it.
Why is it awful? Because you think the guy's going to slit your throat?
I'm talking about on the face. I've had it on the face, and it's
okay.
It's awful, and it's not awful from the standpoint of you know, like you get the hot washcloth is nice. You know, they soften you all up. They put the lotions and everything on you, and they get all the hair soft and the skin soft and everything. And they shave it, and it's good when they shave it down. But then they pull like your skin, and they start going up against the grain. At least this one did that I went to, and it's like it was really sensitive when they start like going really close. I mean, it's like you know, you're already close, man. Like there's no hair there, but then they like pull it and like open up your hair follicles, and they start shaving it back. So it can be unpleasant. How's that? Especially down here too, like at the, like down by the Adam's apple.
Well, I just think like you think about the movies, right? You're watching the movies and you go to the barber shop and everybody's getting the nice clean shave and they're doing that. And all of a sudden throat gets slit in the movies. Like that's what I think about the whole time. It freaks me out when I would have my necks, if the guy's doing my neck and I'm thinking, oh God, I'm like, what am I doing in this vulnerable position? I don't like that.
How many enemies do you have in Buffalo, bud? Like, what are you worried about?
I'm on a podcast and I give my opinion, and that's enemy enough for some of these people. So,
you know,
good point.
Someone's going to find out that Craig's next in the seat and they're going to be like,
yeah, exactly.
That Craig Rehman, good, I want you to just apply a little more pressure.
Exactly.
Apply a little more pressure right under the jugular there and press. It's all right, Riv.
Steer the ship, Captain.
Steer the ship. I can steer the ship a number of ways. I can start with this. I have a theory after watching some of the Sabres games lately that you have been vocal, and I think Van's been vocal. I think Ribs has been vocal. We all have about moves at the deadline to make this team better. And, you know, I'm starting to wonder, do we just hold pat here until and ride out the season? Do you just like, forget about Timo Meier. Forget about bringing in and acquiring a major piece or shipping out a piece. Like, why are we going to tinker with this?
I've said it and I'll hold true to it. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, you have a good thing going, you're growing and you got a great team and they're playing for each other and you're having success. You're exactly where you want to be in the rebuild, but like, you're exactly where you want to be right now. You have a chance to make playoffs. So why are you going to go and make a move? You know what I mean? Like, just to make a move, just to say we made a move. So I'll hold firm to that, you know?
Yeah. Chemistry can be messed with, I think.
Well, what about
100? Well, every GM, that's their biggest coming down the stretch at deadline time. That's exactly, what are they talking about? How is this going to affect our room? How is this going to add to it? Is it going to be good for our room? Is it not going to be good for our room? Is this player going to help us? You know, like Evander Kane when he came in to the Sharks. Like, how is this going to affect us? You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Well, let me ask you this, Gio. When I sit here and
our room?
When I tell you about a player that's 26 years old, 26. What does that sound like to you and the Sabres? You like the age?
What do you mean? Yeah, you, I like, don't mind the age one bit.
Yeah, why is that?
What do you mean, why is that? Because it's right in their prime, coming in
right in their prime. Older than the youngness, like Tage Thompson's what, 24, 25. You have Mittelstadt, yeah, who's 24. You have Power, that's 20. All these players are all under the age of 23. Like, it's a super young, yeah, team. And when you have a 26 year old, you're like, that's a good age because he's a little bit older than our core. This 26 year old, his prime is going to be the next 6 years. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So moving forward and talking about a player, when you're thinking about, let's try and get better here. Okay. 21 goals in 81 games, 30 goals in 78 games, 22 goals in 70 games, 12 goals in 54 games, 35 goals in 77 games this year, 28 goals, 49 games. Timo Meier.
Give me a name.
Timo Meier. Right. Is a very, very good player. Last year, he had 76 points, 35 goals in 77 games. This year, he's got 28 goals, 48 points in 49 games. This guy is a stud playing on an average hockey team in San Jose that doesn't have the same skill set and future that Buffalo Sabres have. Could you imagine acquiring Timo Meier and seeing what he could do moving forward?
Well, my first questions, if you're diving into this, one, why and how and are the Sharks willing to part ways with them?
Mike Greer,
you got a 26 year old in his prime, like you said. This brings me back to every argument you have about fantasy football trades. You come to me with this trade, how it's going to benefit me, but you still want to make the trade.
Hold on. Like,
You're
just
want
searing
this,
me right you, now. You
give this whole paragraph long explanation why I'm winning this trade. If I'm winning this trade so much, why are you making it? So why?
I'm just happy to help you out.
Yeah, you're just a good guy. You're a good guy. I'm trying to help out a last place team in fantasy football.
Are you telling me right now? You telling me right now that? Now, Timo Meier, here, this is not me. I'm not throwing out a fantasy trade. I'm throwing out the information that I get on, you know, Sportsnet, ESPN, Twitter.
It's out there. It's been confirmed that the Sabres have inquired or talked about. And that's not, I know that's not what you're saying, Gio.
What I'm saying is,
you want to know why Mike Greer would get rid of him.
That's my first thought. You're talking about a 26-year-old in the prime of his career. You know what I mean? I don't care whether you're in a rebuild or not in San Jose. That's a guy that you should be able to.
I'll tell you the first thing I thought, Gio, when I heard this.
So if they build for 3 years, 4 years, you still have him for 3 or 4 years of his prime. I don't think they want him for three or four years of his prime.
I think they want Matt Savoy and a first round pick. And I'm just using the Sabres as an example.
That's it.
And another piece for 12 years. That's what I think it's about, you know, having a, you're going to pay this guy
an extreme amount of money.
He's up for a $10 million qualifying offer. And Gio, listen, your questions are all valid, because the first thing I said was, like, red flags went up. Why is Mike Greer getting rid of this guy? Mike Greer is the highest of character human beings in the sport of hockey. Okay. Why is he getting rid of this guy? So I'm like, why is this? And it
may be nothing wrong with Meyer, right? Like, it may be just like you're talking, that they are resetting and they want long.
I think they just don't want to have a guy there for the next 3-4 years until they're ready to be good, making $8 million just performing. And maybe even Timo Meyer doesn't want to be a part of that. Like, we got to look at that too.
100%. So that's why I posed the question. Why is it? And now that's the first thing you need to look at, is why, the why of it.
It's going to lessen. It's going to lessen the value of Meyer if someone ever catches wind that Timo Meyer wants out of there, right? So Greer's, he's probably going to make it look like he's trying to make a good hockey.
That's his plan. Yes.
Well, you need to understand that Timo Meyer, like Petey said, this season he's a restricted free agent, so he's finishing his contract. He's 26 years old, so he has 1 year before he's unrestricted. But you have to qualify him at $10 million. So for 1 year, Mike Greer is going to qualify Timo Meyer for $10 million, and then most likely he's going to lose Timo Meyer next year to unrestricted free agency. So he's getting ahead of it. He's getting ahead of it. And I sit there and I say, Kevin Adams is going to say, yeah, we're really interested in you, Timo, but we are not going to be paying you $10 million a year for the next 7 years. We can come to an agreement at $8 million, $8.5 million. We will pay you that.
And it is out there that if Greerzy gets a package that he feels happy with to trade him, that he will then give the team permission to speak to his agent.
Trade. Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. But so that it brings me to the next question. When you're making a deal like that, like, everyone's like, go get this guy, he's scoring all this. Where does he fit into your team? He might not be the 30-40 goal scorer on the Buffalo Sabres that he is on San Jose. He might not be put in the same position to have the same numbers that he has in San Jose. So how does he fit into your roster? And does he become an overpaid depth scorer? You know what I mean? Like you said, Rivs, like, Buffalo can't afford to sign him for $10 million. You know what I mean? So what is he in the landscape of your team? How does he fit into the landscape of your team and where it's going with the guys you have and your core? You know what I mean? So it's easy to say, let's make these hockey trades, but these are all the things that go on behind the scenes.
You ask yourself, like, a guy, like, for an example, JJ Paterka. He has really exploded onto the scene. He's got a lot of clout that goes beside his name. The abilities that he has are going to be top notch. Here's the thing. You're going to have to pay him in 2 years. 2 years, you're going to have to pay JJ Paterka a lot of money. Because in 2 years from now, right now he's got what? He's on pace for what? 40 points a year, Petey? Somewhere around there?
Yeah, right around there.
Well, in 2 years from now, when he's in his third year of his deal, I guarantee you that kid could be upwards of 60, 70 points. Okay? You might not be able to pay JJ Paterka, but guess what? Jari Kulich, who's a first-round draft pick, 28th overall, who plays very similar to JJ Paterka, who's in the minors right now, has a longer leash, a longer time period of play, because he still hasn't started his entry-level contract. You understand? So JJ Paterka might be a player that Mike Greer is looking at. You might be looking at a possible first-round draft pick. You know, there's lots.
These are the problems Kevin Adams wants to have. These are the problems that he's coming into, because he's doing a great job with building this team and having this team have a turnaround. With that also being said, it's going to come to a point here where they are going to not be able to, or not want to, get rid of a Paterka if he's serviceable for 2 more years, and then deal with it then. like Chicago Blackhawks when they were in their prime, like LA Kings when they were in their prime, like Tampa Bay was in their prime. They lose assets for nothing to win another cup or have another run at the cup. You know what I mean? Like to have the success they had over a 6-7 year span, Blackhawks, Kings, Tampa.
Look at the turnover they had to do.
They had to, they had to run a guy to the very limit of what they could with not optimizing the assets coming back their way. You know what I mean? Like with
a lot of times these teams are trading for guys on expiring deals anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So like it's going to come to a point where that kind of stuff is going to happen where, yeah, ideally maybe you want to take advantage of the value of a player a year or two early, but you want him to help your team in the short term for that year or two instead of getting the asset long term.
Now, Gio, don't get me wrong. I'm curious to know your thoughts on this. I like the idea of Timo Meier. I think I'm just kind of more on board with leaving things the way they are. And I mean, I just don't know if you can get him in the offseason. That's the problem.
That's where the problem lies.
But I will say this, though. Tell me what you think of this line. If you have Thompson, Skinner, and Tuck on the top line, because Meyer's a right winger, right? And you have Jack Quinn, Dylan Cousins.
Meyer's a left winger.
It says right here.
He's a left shot. He's a left shot anyway. But okay.
He's
a winger.
Yeah, exactly. Winger. Right. If you're a winger, you should be able to fucking play both sides. Yes. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So he's a winger. But I mean, if he's a true right winger, I mean, you could move Jack Quinn to the left because he does play an offside shot left wing. Have Dylan Cousins in the middle with Timo Meier on the right. Be a pretty unbelievable line.
Yeah, I don't. For sure it would, and I've never not said on this not to make moves. I just think you need to be cautious with the moves you make, and I think reading into what Kevin Adams says, that's his plan, is to be cautious and make sure that it's the right fit for our team at the right time.
Which is absolutely frustrating for some people, and it was extremely frustrating for me. But after watching the way this team plays, I'm thinking the way you are, Gio. I'm like, maybe leave.
The only reason it's frustrating is because it's been 10 plus years of not making playoffs and of this talk of a rebuild. If this was Kevin Adams year 3 of 3, everybody's on board with what he's doing. But I think that's what he's been trying to preach since he got here is, listen, I understand the impatience and where we are as a city and as an organization, but I want to do it right. I'm going to do it right the way I see fit. And whether it's right or wrong, I'm going to live by that principle. You know what I mean? And every GM makes mistakes, right? So that could be waiting too long to make a move. That could be making a move too soon. But they're going to make the decision at the time to do it best for them. What's for them at the time.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think it's the impatience and it's what you mentioned. It's the time that the team has been out of the playoffs that I think people just want a knee-jerk move. And is it knee-jerk? Yeah. I mean, fuck, how many was the last time we made a deadline deal to make the team better down the stretch? It's been a dozen years. So
yeah. Well, let me ask you this. You're fast forwarding 20 games from now. Right now we're at 47 games. We're a little over halfway mark. We have 3 games in hand and sit 3 points out of a playoff spot. Okay. Favorable. I like, they have to like where they're at. 47 games right now. You fast forward to 67 games. This team is in the same position, the same spot, 3 points out of a wild card spot with some games in hand. Do you look to make a move to make this team stronger, or do you go with what you have in the lineup? Because you're going to allow the kids to either,
it's valuable experience to let them ride it out. No?
Well,
I mean, like, and I'm not.
Listen, trade deadline's March 3rd. The trade deadline is March 3rd. Okay. And as, and after March 3rd, the Sabres are going to have like, I think 20 some odd games. There's no guarantee that making a deal at the deadline is going to help you down that stretch of the last 20 some odd games. And let me tell you something. You know who the first game is after the deadline when you're trying to rebuild all that new chemistry? Tampa Bay Lightning. Then the Edmonton Oilers. Then the New York Islanders. Then the Dallas Stars. Then the New York Rangers. Then the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Washington Capitals. Then you might catch a break with Philly.
So that... The point being, right, is everyone loves deadline talk, deadline moves. Everyone loves free agency moves and talk. How much of it actually percentage-wise pays off for a team? You know what I mean? Like, how much does it move the needle? How many teams at the deadline are active trying to push their team over the edge and they don't win or they don't advance or they don't make it? You know, like... It's not a sure thing, like you say, Petey. It's not a sure thing to go out and sign a $10 million guy at free agency that he's going to make your team any better. And it's not a sure thing to make a deadline move that your team's going to be any better. So, I don't know, buyer beware in those instances.
The only benefit that I can see to making a deal like that, and I know we're ways away from the deadline, but the team's sitting one spot out of a playoff spot. So, I mean, you have to start to try to think about, you know, heading into the All-Star break, you know, what the plan's going to be after your week-long break, right? But there is something to be said for bringing a guy in at the deadline, having him get that time here, get acclimated, get familiar with the team, the city, the travel, and then all of a sudden, well, the travel, I mean, that's a weak point, but I'll throw it in there anyway. But, you know, fucking travel is the same.
From Buffalo? Like,
well, okay, Jim, but if you're...
You're not out west. You're not Dallas. You're not... Winnipeg. Listen,
I'm going to tell you something. I only played for two teams in the East. I played for Buffalo and New Jersey, and the travel was significantly different. Significantly different. Oh,
100%.
New Jersey. Bus yeah. to Rangers, How bus to Islanders, exactly. bus to Philly. You know, like you're home in 30 minutes on a flight from Pittsburgh. I mean, it is the
easiest.
But
that's easiest. That's three teams in the league. You know what I mean? Like that's right. the Rangers, Islanders, Devils, and maybe four. You can put the Flyers in there.
Well, that's
like,
why I wanted to make the point.
Travel's
and
not,
when I was in San Jose, when I was in San Jose, we had to fly into Oakland.
Well, you had the curfew in San Jose.
Yeah, we had the curfew and our plane wasn't up to standard. So we always had to fly into Oakland, which is about an hour plus away, get off the plane in Oakland, take a bus to the airport in San Jose, and they drop us off there to get our cars. And then we'd have to drive 45 minutes home. It
all
was
those, all those rich people in Orange County, or wherever, not Orange County, but Silicon Valley. They don't want anybody. They don't want to be bothered after 11.
Well, everyone deals with it, right?
Stupid like, money out there,
Montreal,
man.
Montreal, we had to clear customs 90% of the time. You know what I mean? So like, that's a pain in the ass. You know, coming back, it was easier, but like leaving, we'd have to go and sit in the regular line. You know what I mean? Clearing customs.
Yeah. Well, that's all I meant. Yeah. You know I mean? So my point was get acclimated, get familiar with the city, and then start fresh next year without having, you know, you got your house all taken care of and your living arrangements in the off season. So you're not brought in on like July 15th. Then you got to have a place ready to go by September. You know what I mean? So there are benefits to it, but. To me, it's more about
there's been
players.
Times when it's paid off. Like it paid off for us in New Jersey. We acquired Langenbrunner and Neuendijk the year before at the deadline when we won the cup the next year. You know what I mean? Like they came in, we made playoffs. We lost out to Carolina, I think, that year. So it didn't pay off that year, but they were on multi-year deals. And you know what? The next year is when it really hit its stride and those guys paid off. You know, like... So it certainly is something to be said about that, Petey, right? Like it's not an immediate effect to the team. It may help you long term to be in there, be settled, get acclimated to the team, coaching area, whatever you want to travel, whatever you want to put on the list of things, Petey.
I'll take that as a good point that I made. Riv, what are you going to say, Riv? You look like you're chomping at the bit.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think Kevin Adams right now is interested in giving away assets for a short-term fix. I think he'd rather stick with what has been built internally. And, you know, he probably might tinker slightly with this roster, but I don't think that he's looking to make a move that is going to be a short-term fix for 1 year and give away assets. If he's going to make a move, it is going to be a significant move that you'll see this player in a Sabres lineup for years to come.
Yeah, he's not doing any rental options right now. He's not in the rental market.
Do you know any concern for you with the All-Star break timing? I mean, the team's going well. I mean, I know they have a couple games left on this trip, and then they have Carolina before the All-Star break. But
when's the next weekend?
February.
I should know this.
No, it's February 3rd, 4th, yeah, 5th week.
But when's their bye week? Also,
do they do that still, up? Or have they already had that? They have a little.
I don't know.
Little time off.
This last 4 weeks has been a nightmare for them. I'll tell you that much. And they've handled things pretty damn well considering the schedule. Four games a week for the last 3-4 weeks that's a tough grind right there.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be very important these last three games. Petey was saying that there's three games before they end and go into the All-Star break. They have Winnipeg, Minnesota, two teams that they've already beaten. Okay. And they are going to be hungry to come out against this team. And then you play Carolina at home to go into the All-Star break. Carolina is not an easy team to play against. So three games in hand they have on the Washington Capitals. They need to try and figure out, you know, how, like, man, if they could win at least two out of three. Oh, it would be incredible. In these next three games.
And that's the risk, right? Like, that's the risk with going into a long break, is that you lose some momentum, you lose some of your vibe. But I mean, coming off the stretch they're on right now, I think they're going to be looking forward to this long little weekend break, you know, half a week, whatever it ends up being. You know what I mean? Like,
what do you think Don Granato was saying to this team going into the All-Star break? When he has a conversation with the boys, you know, what is his message?
Like, I think, like you said, if you can get two of these next three going into the break, that's a hell of a start to jumpstart yourself going into that. I don't want to call it second half, but coming down the stretch, you're feeling pretty good about things. You definitely don't want to limp into it. You know, you want to have some momentum going in. So I think if they are 2-3, two out of three of the next games going in, I think he is continuing to do what he's doing and saying, listen, we're having a great year. We're doing things right. Let's continue this. We have a shot to be in the conversation, and we're pushing for playoffs. I think that's his message going into the All-Star break, is get your mindsets around this next stretch, because we're making a push for playoffs.
Do you remember your All-Star breaks? You remember those 3-4 days?
No. Excuse me, Ron. Are you listening? No.
I remember the All-Star breaks.
That's what I'm saying is if you go in winning two out of these next three, that's the conversation. Hey, boys, I understand this is a good time to relax and have some fun, but we have a real chance to make playoffs. So take care of yourselves over these 4 or 5 days.
I'll tell you who doesn't have a chance to make the playoffs.
Does that sink into the younger team in the league, though?
I don't know. I don't know what the room is like. I'm not in that room. But yeah. Pat Burns would always say, don't go falling in a fucking puddle this weekend.
Well, you don't think Kevin Adams is going to mention something to the team before they go away and talk about responsibility? Yeah, and
It's professionalism. Yeah, sure. These young men have done something pretty good up to this point. They've given themselves a chance, which they're going to have, you know, 32 games left in the year. It's a track race, man. I mean, it's a race. and you have to be consistent and be at the top of your game. And in order to you, when you come back from these 4 or 5 days of, you know, letting down your hair a little bit and enjoying yourself, it's to make sure that there is a common thought in your mind amongst the entire group that if we can take care of ourselves a little bit more than maybe what you thought we would, it might give you an upper hand moving into the second half of the year. Second half of the year is the grind, right? It's the grind. The body mentally and physically are going to have aches and pains, and you're going to need everything. You're going to need everything. You're going to need all the players on this team. It's not just Tage Thompson has to continue to be a super stud and Rasmus Dahlin. It's you need an entire team to make the playoffs, and everybody is going to count.
I got it. But I think these are the times that show a team's maturity too, right? Like where they are on the spectrum of being a good or a great team, how they respond in moments like this. Do they take it and see that, you know, they have this big opportunity in front of them, take care of themselves? Or are they like, hey, screw this. We're having a good year. I'm going to go have some fun and get back to it. You know, so this is a big maturity check for this team.
I feel like if the Sabres make the playoffs, I think they knock the Bills off the pedestal as the big team in town. I don't give a shit, man.
Well, the way the Bills season ended with that game.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like they make the playoffs, all of a sudden there's buzz around the Sabres and everyone's gotta go.
Oh my God. The Bills instantly become chumps if the Sabres make the playoffs, man.
I was at that game too. Man, it was, there was nothing to cheer for, man. It was boring. Wasted. Sorry.
I believe what I'm saying. Like, I think people are so pissed off at the Bills that hey, you can't walk around town saying that the Miami Dolphins game is a bye week. That's strike one.
Yeah.
And that's a mindset. Yeah. Okay. I'm no champion. Okay. But I play one on the podcast, and all I'll say is you can't walk around fans, players, anyone saying, oh, Tua's not playing. It's a bye week. We're going to, and then you shit the bed against the Dolphins. You barely win. And that was the table setter for the Bengals. I'm sorry. It was.
I think, listen, a lot goes into it, right? Like they had a shitty year as far as adversity and all that shit. You know what I mean? Like I still think they're a really good team and they're going to have a chance at championships, but I don't disagree with you. If the Sabres get into the playoffs this year, holy shit, you'll be seeing Saber stuff and Bill stuff getting taken down.
It's so true, man. It's so true. What do they call it? Sabres Mafia. Let's go. Mount up. Yeah. You know, what did you think just about the handling of Vancouver and Bruce Boudreau and everything and all how that all went?
I don't know. I don't have much of an opinion on the matter except pro sports and
pro sports is harsh, eh? I mean, like, listen.
Yeah, right. Like, there's no way around it. And I think the people that are naive to the sense that you think it's a business. I don't care what you say. And you are a piece of meat. You are just an asset to be used and discarded. You know, like, it's, as harsh as that sounds, that's what it is. You know what I mean? Like, it's not jaded thinking. It's not. It's the reality of the situation. Of pro sports, it's a win mentality, and if you're not helping the team win, then you're—I don't know.
I mean, I suppose it's—I suppose
you may have good intentions that you're like you want to take care of the human and the person, but there's only so many people that can do that. It's the elite of elite to be a player coach in this league, and so that's a harsh reality. I think it is what it is.
I hear you, and I suppose you know. Yeah, it would have been nice if they handled it a little bit differently. But at the end of the day, I don't feel sorry for a guy that's making $2 million not to work.
Yeah. I don't know how you change it, though, right? Like, you can say you want to change it, but I don't know how you change sports culture in the sense that there's no way around it, right? Like,
Yeah, well, Tockett had a good first game against the Hawks. Obviously, it was the Hawks when they got their ass kicked against the Seattle Kraken.
Yeah, the Hawks are a glorified American Hockey League team. Like, I mean, with Patrick Kane on it. That's it. The entire team should be in the minors. Except for, like, literally five guys.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Awful. I got a question for you guys. I don't know. Like, I'm not a big NHL All-Star guy watching the game, watching the skills competition. No, my kids love it. Okay. My kids enjoy it. It's just not my cup of tea. NHL is highlighting three new events. Did you guys see those?
No, I was hoping you weren't going to bring them up.
So they have Splash Shot, Pitch and Puck, and Tendy Tandem.
You want to tell everybody what those are?
I don't really know.
Yeah.
The Splash Shot.
Don't just read the fucking headlines, Riv.
I don't want to read the headlines. I will give you a little Cole's notes on it. But the Splash Shot is you're dividing players into four teams of two. Players are required to hit all targets before attempting to dunk their opponents, the winners being the one to dunk his opponent first. I mean, what dunk in what? Water?
Well, no. Yeah, it's got to be like, what do you call those things you have at the party? The fucking dunk tanks. You know what I mean? I got to.
You're
going to
have hockey
that,
players sit in hockey equipment and you're getting dunked in that?
I have no idea. We'll find out.
This is so stupid.
Okay, great.
Now, John Tortorella almost
I'm super excited.
Because I'm super excited.
I don't care what anyone says.
Because you have a night off.
I think you do the classic. Yeah, you do the classic shit. You do the breakaway, a real breakaway, not a fancy breakaway, a real breakaway challenge. You do a hardest shot. You do an accuracy shooting. You do the fastest skater and have a normal fucking game and be done with it. Like, it is what it is. Like, there's not.
You're literally taking the coolest athletes on the planet and making them look like fucking knobs.
What do hockey players like to do in their off time?
Drink? Well, they used to.
They like to play golf. No. They like to play golf. So the next one is the pitch and puck. We'll have players combine with their hockey and golf skills on a par 4 golf hole featuring an island green. Six players will participate. The winner being the one who successfully sinks the puck or ball, which I don't know what that means, into the hole with the fewest shots. Well, that just sounds like golf, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's... Well, so I think instead of getting...
What are we doing here?
Crazy with this... Yeah, I think instead of getting all crazy with this bullshit, if you want to do something different, I don't know, like, just thinking, like, off the top of my head, you know, does that... you? To know do perfect, you know what I mean?
Have oh
you
yeah,
seen do perfect like yeah. Trick shot shit.
Love
you know
those
mean?
Guys.
Like, okay, so if you want to do something, you want to highlight these guys. You want to highlight their personality. Do an all sports. You know what the all sports challenge is, where they go to a golf course, right? Rivs, you got like a
yep.
frisbee.
Yep.
You got a football. You got a soccer ball. You got a tennis, and you use all these things to get down the thing. But that's going to highlight personality. It doesn't have to do with hockey. You know what I mean, but you're following these guys as people, as personality. You see their personality come out. I say ditch the hockey, quote unquote hockey aspect of it, and just do a skills challenge that way. Like, do a trick shot challenge. Do a and get their not hockey trick shot. You know what I mean? Like, do a fucking basketball thing or something. I don't know. Like,
so listen to this one.
And
this
Ben,
is the third
on
one,
it, right? Like, do something like that where you're highlighting your all stars in a challenge like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
So
go,
the first
finish,
one,
the third one,
we're the first one. We're dunking. We're trying to dunk players into a dunk tank. The second one is players are using their golf skills to play a par 4 golf course and how many shots it takes to get in the hole. The third one is Tendy Tandem. Eight goaltenders will work in tandem, one shooting on the other in net. So the Central will go against the Pacific and Atlantic will go against the Metro. Shooting, the shooting goaltender from the division will take a shot from a designated mark and will be rewarded 3 points if the shot goes in the hole, 2 points if it hits the in net target, and 0 if it misses the net. Holy
shit balls. Here's the question. Instead of sitting here and talking about how stupid these are, can we talk about the people that come up with them? These ideas. And then not only that, because I can appreciate more than anything out of the box thinking. I appreciate out of the box thinking. I do. But the people that approve the out of the box ridiculousness, they're the ones that should be fired, not the ones coming up with these ideas.
I would love to know the stupid ones that were brought up.
Well, that's
if these are the ones that you're picking. Holy crap, man. What is going on, NHL? Embarrassing.
The All-Star game used to be so cool. Fastest skater, hardest shot, accuracy, relay, and the breakaways. And then there was the one year where they added the thing where the goalies shot it from their own end over like a little barricade to try to get it in the net. I mean, I could appreciate that. I mean, guys like Brodeur that could snap the puck like a player, but it's just fucking ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And I don't even care. Like, it's not for me. Apparently it's for the kids, but like,
I think like Rivs, right? Like,
this is the equivalent of the fashion show and Slapshot. Like, these players should be like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm going to fucking flash them, Gary. I'm going to flash them. And every one of those women are going to be running for the exits with the exception of my wife. Like, this is unacceptable. Like, you are making hockey players look like fucking losers. They show no personality. They show all disinterest when they're on there. The thing last year where they were saucing pucks under those circles in the Vegas fountain, that was the dumbest thing I've seen the NHL do, and they've done a lot in the last 30 years.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just, we're taking some of I watched this documentary on Netflix, and tennis players and golfers are fucking cooler now than hockey players are. Because what the NHL makes these players do, they herd them around like cattle, and they fucking try to grow the game, content, let's be influencers, fuck off and let them be cool hockey players.
No, but that's the Ribs' point. These are the best ideas that came out of it. Like, they were looking at 10 ideas, and these are the best ones that came out of it. Like, and that's, I think, like, that sauce or whatever, like you're talking about, the circle sauce or whatever last year. I think part of the problem is you're sticking guys that don't necessarily know each other, and you're expecting their personalities to come out in a 30-second clip. Do some homework and figure out a couple guys that are buddies, that are like hometown buddies that have been hanging around each other for a while. So now they can banter back and forth. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you know what they need to do?
If you get me with someone that I don't know, it's going to be boring as shit. But you get me and Rivs together, you get me and you, Petey, together, you're going to get better personality coming out for each of those players.
You need to find two guys that love to have some beers, play some, as the kids call it these days, some chel. Maybe you throw a bong on the table and you watch them play each other head to head in some hockey, because that's the only way you're going to get personality out. Because that's what these kids like to do. Or mic them up and send them out to the bar. That's the only other thing I'd want to do to see hockey players do. Not these stupid challenges. Thanks for
having me. I am watching an Alex Ovechkin. And if people haven't seen this,
is this when he has
the Alex Ovechkin shootout 2009 NHL All-Star competition. And it's just like, what are you doing?
Is that when he had the right hand stick and the left hand stick and the sombrero and the sunglasses? Yeah,
and he missed like a whole bunch of breakaways. He tripped on one. You have to go and watch it. It's just, I hate the All-Star game.
Who could be the all-time leading goal scorer in league history. And he's going to have that clip of him in a sombrero.
You know what Gretzky's worst clip was? Gretzky's worst clip in hockey was his fight with Phil Sykes. That's it. You got Alex Ovechkin putting on a sombrero. Like, look at where the game has gone, man. The game has gone.
I'm sure they were saying that about a shirtless Gretzky in a commercial, though, too. Like, what is he doing? But every era has their moment, right? This is just ours.
I don't know. I'll end it on that. I have no idea.
All right.
But on that note, what else is on your mind? Gio, anything? Where are
I
you?
I got nothing, bud. No, I am in Youngstown, Ohio. My son was asked to come out and practice with the Youngstown Phantoms for the week. So that's where I am right now, out in Youngstown, watching. They're doing a power play PK because they play tomorrow. So he's doing a whole lot of sitting on the bench right now watching. But
well, if he needs any advice on that, I can. I'm happy to walk him through it.
How to shuffle the right way, where to be.
Listen, that was the best time.
Do you want to be in the middle or do you want to be the bookend?
You want to know the greatest words a fourth or fifth line guy can hear in practice? All right, power play, everybody on the bench.
My day's over.
Hey,
unlace him.
Hey, I got 20 minutes here till Jeep wraps his friggin' arms around me and we go and have a little.
That's unless they want you to be the pre-scout PK and just eat bucks from the power play one time.
Yeah, you know where I had to stand?
Yeah,
I had to
stand the fourth line guy. Go stand in front.
I had to stand in front of. I was taking away the Ovechkin spot for Al Kotalik. And you want to know one guy that had a hell of a shot that had no idea where it was going? That was him.
Yeah.
And he did not care who was standing in front of him in practice.
Well, I told you that story one time about Richard Zetnik. Okay, we were doing power play, and Andrei Markov and Sheldon Surre were our two power play defensemen. Andrei Markov, who was a left-handed shot, insane passer. Okay. Would always just send one-timers passes over to Sheldon Surre. And Sheldon Surre at the time, I think he scored 26 goals that year. And they were just, I don't know how many scored on the power play. They were epic scud missile bombs on net. And Surre shot to score. Didn't matter who was in front of the net. He was ripping 100-plus mile-an-hour one-timers bar down from the point.
Yep.
And Richard Zetnik was our net front presence. And one practice with Michel Therrien, he basically just said, fuck it, not going in front, not going in front. Meanwhile, Surrey's literally missling 100 mile an hour slap shots on net. And I could see Michel Therrien skating down the ice saying, get back in front of the net. And Zetnik's like, no, not doing it. And they were literally arguing on the ice. And he refused to go in front of the net. And I'm going to tell you right now.
Did Surre not throw any by his ears? Yeah, no way.
Every shot was by his ears. Yes, in practice, every single shot was whistling. Yeah, it was ridiculous. And I wouldn't have wanted to do it either. You know, in a game, you're going to stand there. You're going to take your lumps. You're going to do what you have to do. But
you eat one right off the teeth if it goes in.
But in the game, you're seeing one or two of those a game. You know what I mean? From Surre? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but in practice, a game, it might hit somebody else.
You're
too.
Seeing, yeah, exactly. But you're seeing 20 of them in practice back to back to back to back. The odds of getting hit are pretty damn good.
That's what I'm saying. And that's why I look at Zetnik and I was like, you know what, man? I said, I totally understand where you're coming from because I would not be sitting there anyway.
And practice was I hated practice, power play practice when I was a net front guy. Hated it. Hated it.
Well, yeah. Because
that's what happened. You'd get hit with something.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Anything bar down for you is like right in the face.
That shit's still on net and it's right off my face.
You went top corner, Gio.
I can't blame him. It was on net. You know, what are you going to do?
It was what a dick.
He shot at his glove, Gio. He still caught you in the beak.